The DSR Network has expanded to 10 podcasts, and to celebrate our expansion, we're running weekly specials in different podcasts each week. This week, listeners of the DSR Daily Brief can receive 25% off the membership price. Members receive an ad-free listening experience and bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and early access to select podcasts. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DAILY to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DAILY. Please note that this special promotion ends on March 8th. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is the DSR Daily, where we look at the world and try to provide some perspective. I'm David Rothkopf, one of your co-hosts, joined as always by Chris Cottenware. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thanks.
And Riley Fessler. How are you doing, Riley?
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. You've got quite a wide array of stories from around the world. Not the usual suspects today. Chris, where do you start?
Just piggybacking on the Haiti story that we reported yesterday, things are deteriorating fast. First, the U.S. Department of State has issued warnings to United States citizens that they should leave Haiti. And second, that they're not directly demanding Prime Minister Ariel Henry's resignation, but they are, I think, using language around the government needs to have a transition plan. Meanwhile, the gang violence continues to get worse. I read this morning that there have been prison breaks, and the gangs are essentially running rampant, running the country. It's not a good situation. And as you pointed out yesterday, David, it's not abnormal, unfortunately, for the country of Haiti to be experiencing these kinds of things.
Yeah, and this particular flare-up does not look like it's going to be over anytime soon. So we'll keep on top of it. Riley?
Well, we have the first civilian fatalities as a result of the Houthis' Red Sea attacks. As we've discussed on this show and our other shows, the Houthis have been routinely attacking ships passing through the Red Sea. And I guess I was a little surprised that thus far there hadn't been any civilian casualties, but we have unfortunately seen the first three. Although India's Navy was able to evacuate 20 crew members from a ship called the True Confidence, three civilians working on the ship did pass away. It occurred roughly 50 nautical miles off of Aden's port. The deceased included two Filipino and one Vietnamese crew members. And there were additional severe injuries. So, I'm concerned that this is going to lead to an escalation again. The fact that this line has been crossed, I think, might merit some response, but we will see.
Well, right. And, we often speak about the Iranian-backed Houthi rebels because Iran is providing weapons and support for this. And so not only does this suggest that the disruptions caused to shipping by the Houthis could continue, but it carries with it, just under the surface, the possibility of even broader escalation, depending on how the winds blow, with the rest of the conflicts in the region. It also suggests that while the U.S. and allies have been seeking to intimidate, pressure the Houthis to stop with these attacks, with a series of attacks on them of our own, that has not thus far worked. So this is a volatile situation. Might it subside when if there's a ceasefire in Gaza? We can't know. The war of regional powers with Houthis has been going on for many, many years. My suspicion is this is not a problem that's going to go away anytime soon. Chris.
Yesterday, the governor of Alabama signed into law a bill granting immunity to IVF providers from legal liability. This came, of course, after the decision about embryos last week in Alabama. The law is effective immediately and aims to protect IVF services without addressing the broader legal status of embryos itself. This is obviously going to be one of the key issues in the 2024 presidential election, along with immigration, abortion rights in the United States. And, you know, of course, we'll be covering all of this extremely closely over the next, 8 months we have of this.
Well, and we'll even probably be talking about it tomorrow morning, because tonight in the State of the Union address, President Biden will mention his desire to pass guarantees in law for the right of women to control their own bodily autonomy. This, of course, directly contrary to the proposed policies of Trump and others to create a national abortion ban. This is one of the big dividing line issues in the United States. And it, along with the preservation of U.S. democracy, are going to be front and center in determining how things go for the world's most powerful nation. The State of the Union will talk about other things too, including providing aid to Ukraine and providing humanitarian assistance to Gaza and getting a ceasefire there, and focus also on the domestic achievements of President Biden. I suspect most of the stories that get written about it will be focused on his vigor and mental acuity, because that's just the story the press wants to write about. And then they will say, hey, how come nobody notices that he's gotten all this stuff done? And it'll be like, well, you're not writing about it. But all of you should listen. And I think you'll hear a strong address about a strong record. It's you know, important in the context of what Chris was just talking about, which is, the clock is ticking. Democracy is on the chopping block if things don't go right in November, and it's March.
Wait, sorry. Can I ask a follow up? What are you looking to hear from Biden tonight?
Well, for me, it's a question of nuance. How strong does he say we need to have aid for Ukraine? How much does he use that as a public opportunity to pressure and even humiliate the people who are blocking that aid? How strong does he come down in favor of the ceasefire side of what's going on in Gaza? Last year, he deftly, brought up Social Security, showed that he was kind of nimble on his feet. What's his interaction with the crowd like? How rude will the far right be when he's, bringing up these kind of issues? We've gotten to the point now where we expect heckling and ugly behavior. How will that manifest itself? I think one of the people that they've invited in is Yulia Navalny, the wife of the Russian dissident who died recently or was murdered recently. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what degree he takes his anti-Putin message and ties it to the pro-Putin elements of the Republican Party. How out in the open is that going to be as part of this election? So, those are things that I think will be interesting to watch. Mr. Fessler.
Yeah, so shifting the focus a bit to Africa, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, which are three West African countries that are governed by military juntas, have kind of been causing trouble a little bit and kind of forging away a path away from the rest of the area. They've declared their intention to establish a joint force aimed at combating jihadist threats, which has been on the rise since they have seen the withdrawal of French forces, as all three of these countries kind of gave France the boot after their juntas took control and instead welcomed in Russian security forces as a way to kind of bolster their security, which apparently has not worked very well, which is not particularly surprising to me. And yeah, I mean, this just follows a trend of these three countries kind of shifting away from the norm in the area. They have announced they will leave ECOWAS, which is the economic bloc for West Africa. And they're just kind of sacrificing their more traditional ties to forge stronger ties with Russia, which, as we know, is not a particularly stable partner. So I can't see this really going well for them. But, you know, the jihadist violence has been on the rise in the region. So I do hope that that is successful, but I'm skeptical.
It's an interesting development. There are always more wars going on in Africa than anywhere else in the world. We tend not to follow them very closely. I'm glad you're staying on top of these things, Riley. Chris?
Refugees International released a report accusing Israel of creating famine-like conditions in Gaza by obstructing humanitarian aid, despite international legal orders to facilitate such aid. The report is based on research in Egypt, Jordan, and Israel, and it highlights the Israeli administrative barriers that limit aid flow, contradicting Israel's claims of improving aid delivery. This is what I want to hear tonight from President Biden. Every single day we're reporting about the plight of the people in Gaza, you know, from our comfortable homes here in the United States, where we rarely, if ever, have to face anything close to what these people, humans, these are humans, by the way, are facing in Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu, in my opinion, is no better than, you know, anybody who has, you know, been accused or convicted of committing genocide. This is out of control. And as much as I know, the United States does not have direct influence over Netanyahu or Israel and their actions, I think we need to come out stronger with some concrete steps about what to do with the deteriorating situation. I mean, we're sadly growing numb to the whole thing. You know, we're reporting on wars and conflicts, you know, every day. You know, now we're, you know, we have Haiti, we have, you know, Mexican border, we have obviously Ukraine, we have Gaza, what Riley just talked about in Africa. Like, come on now. I don't know the policy. I just don't. I believe that a two-state solution is the right way forward. But I don't know. And you know, this is my ignorance or whatever, but I don't understand why we cannot, you know, do some of the things that we've done to other countries in terms of sanctions, in terms of, you know, policy changes. What do we need to do, David? What do we need to do?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, I don't have an easy solution. You know, yesterday I participated in a couple of high-level discussions with a bunch of foreign policy senior officials on these issues. And I would say that, you know, a word here, a word there, they sounded very much the same as you do. One of the questions that was posed to me, because I was giving an address to one of these groups, was, you know, well, what could the United States have done differently that would have changed Israel's behavior? And my answer is, I don't know what would have changed the behavior of Netanyahu. Netanyahu is every bit as bad as you say he is. He's doing to Gaza what Putin is doing to Ukraine. But I do know that if we hadn't embraced him right away, if we hadn't provided him with the weapons he needs for this, then the United States would not be being damaged by this. And, you know, as somebody who's concerned with U.S. foreign policy, the first thing that I would say is, you know, we could have distanced ourselves from this, knowing full well that this is where it would have gone. I also think that, you know, the United States has played this card of, well, we're not going to criticize them publicly, so that'll help us maintain influence. It hasn't given us any influence. What could have given us some influence is not providing weapons. There was a story in the Washington Post yesterday about 100 different kinds of weapons shipments that we've been providing to them throughout the course of this war. We are providing the 2,000-pound bombs that are causing so much destruction. We don't have to do that. And if we didn't do it, Israel's behavior, I think, would have been quite different. We shouldn't do it going forward. And yet still, the United States has said publicly and privately that it's going to continue with that policy. Finally, you know, we're part of the international institutions where we have vetoed a number of measures that could have produced some kind of humanitarian aid surge or pressure on the Israelis. And I think that's been a mistake. I think we've been on the wrong side in this conflict. We put all our bets on using our influence with the Israelis to achieve some kind of peaceful outcome. And while it may happen, we may get some kind of ceasefire and hostage deal, it also may not happen, and this may continue to deteriorate. I finally think, you know, surging humanitarian aid, which is what people are talking about doing, is absolutely essential. We could have, should have, and should be opening up sea lanes to the coast of Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid there, bringing hospital ships to the coast of Gaza, working with the international community to provide humanitarian aid distribution, and punishing Israel for blocking it. There are laws on the books in the United States that prohibit us from providing weapons to people who violate international law. There are laws on the books that prohibit us from working with countries that block aid, which is a kind of an international law violation. And we ought to, you know, respect and honor our laws. Those are some thoughts. Obviously, this deserves more thought, and we will listen to see where the president is on this. Anyway, that's my two cents. On to the next story. Riley?
So a pretty harrowing report from the International Organization for Migration, reporting a record high of 8,565 migrant deaths on global land and sea routes took place in 2023, marking the highest tally since it began counting a decade ago. So I feel like this is kind of a story that drifts in and out of the headlines of, you know, migrants, especially in the Mediterranean Sea. You know, we see kind of reports every so often of large kind of boats. I mean, boats is a strong term. It's usually like rafts that people are crammed on trying to reach Europe. And we saw a rise, especially in the Mediterranean, from 3,129 from 2,411 in the previous year. And the overall increase in deaths was nearly 20% more than 2022, with approximately 3,700 people drowning. So this is clearly an issue that is getting worse, not better. And I feel like it's kind of an issue that has vanished a bit from the headlines, at least from what I see. I feel like, again, it kind of sometimes receives extensive coverage and then other times is just completely absent from the headlines. And it's clearly something that is not going to get better on its own. It needs some kind of reform. And, you know, without coverage of this, I worry that this issue is going to fall by the wayside.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it does fall by the wayside. You know, all these people, think about these people again in the context of Chris's prior comment. They get in small boats, rickety boats. They put their lives in the hands of dubious characters for whom they pay all their life savings, and they risk their lives to get out of whatever country they're in and try to find a better life. The presumption it ought to be that they have good reason for doing this, and we ought to take care of them. We meaning developed world countries that have the ability to reach out and you know preserve their lives. We don't do it. In fact, there are big factions in our countries that want to make it harder for them to get across a river or get across the sea or get across some mountains. And it's really disgusting behavior, particularly when you look at the real statistics about immigrants who come to countries, provide important components of the labor market, work to make the society better, work harder, and have a lower crime rate than anybody else in the society. So you're absolutely right, Riley, and it's a tragedy that thousands and thousands of people are dying each and every year because we're not doing what we easily could do to preserve those lives. So that's it for today. Obviously, today we're going to be looking at what goes on tonight at the State of the Union and comment on the commenters on the State of the Union. We've got a variety of podcasts coming your way today on the subject, including one with the great Jen Rubin of the Washington Post, and more for you tomorrow. So the DSR Network is the place to be. Join us here each and every day. I think Greg Sargent, by the way, on the Daily Blast has a conversation with the new Democratic nominee for the Senate in Texas, Colin Allred, former NFL player who seeks to knock Ted Cruz out of the Senate. That's a worthy goal, so it's a worthy thing to be listening to. So there's a lot for you to choose from. Please do. Please come back. Please join us again tomorrow. Until then, bye-bye. Thank you.